Hello, everybody. Thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With me today is Daniel McAdams. Daniel, it's good to be back in our Lake Jackson studio and back in business again. And we had a nice conference up in D.C., but it's good to be back here and talking about real serious things now.
It is, back in the studio.
Right. What I want to talk about is something that's ongoing. It happens to be in the Senate. There's going to be a vote shortly, probably during our program here, that the Senate will be voting on Rand's amendment to repeal the authority to use military force, which has been around for 16 years. It's old, it's abused, and they are debating it. It's not an extensive debate, but the plan has been laid out that there's going to be a motion to table, which is to kill it, you know, more or less. So it won't be a vote on the bill. It's a vote on table. That gives people a little bit more leeway on what they want to do. But this to me is a very important piece of legislation.
And I think Rand fought pretty hard to make sure that he was able to at least get a vote on whether to vote on it. You know, he had to do, I think, some procedural things. He even sat down on the floor or something, right. I think he tweeted out. So he really was dedicated to having a vote on whether you can vote. But what I liked best about it is I liked Rand's amendment. I liked the way it was drafted. And I think we have the text here. I'm not going to read it, but anyone reading this can see how clean this is. This is how bills should look. It simply said authorization for the 2001 use of force. That would be Afghanistan. Authorization for the 2002. That would be Iraq. These two authorizations are repealed. Nice and clean.
And obviously it should be done, but it's interesting on all the gyrations that they go through explaining why, yes, good idea, but, you know, there's always a but. And I read one reason from Senator Jack Reed why he's not going to vote for it, and it tells you a whole lot. And I'm just going to read his quote because he will not support this, but he has a reason, and I guess if you're a neocon, you can have your reason and admit it. He says, the ranking Democrat of the Senate Armed Forces Armed Services Committee, Senator Jack Reed, also warned about the message Paul's amendment might send to the world about the country's commitment to foreign conflict in which it is already involved. My goodness, wouldn't that be horrible if they thought that we might lose a little bit of commitment? Of course, exactly the opposite is what we need. But there's a lot of support there. People talk about, well, yeah, we should repeal this because it's old and it's not up to date. But I can't vote for it until you have a new one, you know, maybe with more power. Remember, like the War Powers Resolution in 1973, they say we're going to restrain Congress and the president from going to war, and it actually increased their chance to go to war. So even if they come around, if they repealed these, that's half the fight. Yeah. Because then what are you going to replace it with? Because there are some in there that would want to make it a lot worse and make it even easier or make it legal for them to do it. Illegal in the sense that exclusive, you know, of the Constitution.
And the downside is they probably would get the authority. But the upside is that we would at least talk about it.
That's
but,
right.
You know, Rand had a good response, and it wasn't a direct response, but something he was quoted in a piece earlier, which I think directly addresses what the senator said here. He said, those who argue for permanent occupation of these countries, and he makes a great point, but that permanent occupation creates a reaction, and that reaction is perpetual terrorism. So round and round you go.
It keeps going. And a lot of them will use the excuse, well, hasn't it been just fine and dandy? We've stayed in Korea, spent trillions of dollars on occupying Korea and maintaining the peace. And how peaceful is the peninsula of Korea been? You know, it's still chaotic. So this whole argument that money was well spent means it just delayed, the final conclusion of it, and also helped bankrupt this country, you know, and that is the problem. What I don't like what we have and what it looks like we'll continue with, the debate is important. I think that's the most important thing that Rand will achieve today, that at least it called attention to it. But they don't want to have the debate. You know, that is what they would like to have happen. But it is something that has to be dealt with. But they're not looking toward you know, maybe we should have a different foreign policy. You know, they just want to tinker around the edges. And but this is an important debate. And unfortunately, you know, I doubt if it'll be a close vote. It's hard to predict what will happen. But it's still very, very important, you know, of what's happening, because the American people have been derelict in their duty, too. They don't pay much attention to this. And the Congress is terrible, you know, for decades, especially since World War II. And, of course, it seems like no matter who's president, they're always tempted to have more power. They're always militaristic, and they think that that is important. They don't want to be hamstrung, you know. And now, just think of the president has not been hamstrung. That probably isn't going to be changed. But just think of what happened last week about, you know, this trial balloon, 3 months, no limitation on the debt, and they want to make that position permanent.
Yeah.
So no limitation on war, no limitation on spending, no limitation on debt, this whole thing. And then, of course, no limitation on printing up the money that they need.
And, you know, the only pushback when President Trump announced the 3,000 additional troops was from the neocons, who said, are you crazy? You got to do many more than that. You got to send more and more. There was never the other side. And I think Rand did address that in an interview he did the other day. Is what we should all be thinking about. He said, if President Obama could not win the war with 100,000 troops, how are we going to do it with 3,000 additional troops? This is a great line. There is no winnable solution in Afghanistan.
And there's been a lot of military people who support that position, but you don't see them on national TV. They're always, you know, promoting more and more and more. And, yeah, these people who say 3,000 won't do it, they're right.
Yeah.
But 100,000 won't do it either. The whole principle is wrong. And that's why, unfortunately, it's a late debate. It's about time we had it. We should have had it. I can remember very clearly how many months we spent leading up to voting for the authorization to go into Iraq. That was a major event. And yet... now, and there was a big argument about whether it should be a declaration of war and will the authority come from the United Nations and this sort of thing. But unfortunately, there's not enough resistance, not enough understanding. So it's easy to say that guy is responsible, the chairman of that committee. No, it's bigger than that. It's the people of this country who are complacent and apathetic. The Congress, they don't even know what their responsibilities are, and they highly resent someone like Rand to bring this up, to force a vote. And, of course, the vote is not going to be on the bill. The vote is going to be on tabling. There's been some debate permitted, but a real debate would go on for hours and hours on this, you know, to do it. But tabling can come up early in the debate or afterwards. The leadership has control of the time.
It begs the question of why are they so opposed to have a vote on whether to have a vote? You know, as I think we probably would both agree, they probably would get their authorization if they had a vote right now on the war. You know what the debate would go like? They're after us. There are 8,000 terrorist groups, you know, in Afghanistan waiting to get us. They would win the vote. So why are they so afraid of even talking about it?
Yeah, there were a few rules that I voted against, because probably on the resolution to go to war, I probably didn't vote for the rule. I didn't want to come up to make that point. But most of the time, if there was a bill to bring up a bill, and there was, you know, some controversy involved, I sort of lean toward the principle, bring it to the floor, you know, have the debate and then have the vote. But this whole thing of not even allowing it to come up to the floor, I think is wrong. And that's how we get ourselves into so much trouble.
You know, I think it's worth looking at what actually these wars are, because this is the other thing that neither the House nor Senate wants to talk about. What are we doing in, just at the least, Afghanistan, Iraq, and Syria? Well, Afghanistan, if you think about it, the Taliban did not attack the United States. They did not threaten the United States. And in fact, they were even willing to turn over Osama bin Laden, if you remember. They said, simply send us a formal request with the evidence that he was involved, and we will extradite him to the U.S. And the U.S. said, no, we're going to bomb. So Osama bin Laden is gone, Al-Qaeda is gone, and now the Taliban are fighting ISIS, which went into Afghanistan because the U.S. was fighting the Taliban and weakening the Taliban, opening the door for ISIS to come in and fill the gaps. So what on earth were you even hoping to achieve there?
Well, add to that the fact that the country that was most involved, and it's becoming more known than ever, of course, is Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
You know, 15 out of the 19 were Saudis, and they got special treatment to get all bin Laden families and Saudis were permitted to leave very early on. And now, you know, the Congress has already authorized the right of the survivors of the people killed on 9/11 that they can sue Saudi Arabia. And look at the atrocious foreign policy of Saudi Arabia, and we have to assume responsibility
yeah.
for that when you think of what they've done to Yemen. I mean, this is horrible. And, in all of this, this is maneuvering type of things and trying to protect, our Constitution and all. But the big issue, I think, is the fight between Saudi and Iran. Sunni against the Shia, the Chinese are involved, the Russians are involved, and right now, the Saudis aren't doing that well, and because a lot of our policies and our wars have backfired on us. I can't believe, oh, well, we're going to go into Iraq because we really want to help Iran. And yet we did.
Yeah.
And now look at what's happened in Syria. All that killing and fighting, has not even supported the positions they want. That's why the neocons are very frustrated, and they always have an answer. More
occupation. You know that you mentioned the Saudi the survivors of 9/11. You may have noticed this, and it's worth looking into. But I think during the discovery phase of this lawsuit, it's come out that the Saudi government had funded a kind of dry run of terrorism. Did you see that?
Yeah.
Of flying planes into buildings or something or other. So this has been very useful to have this information.
Well, of course, they had information about the FBI. A few well-placed FBI agents, honest ones, reported that they were learning how to crash airplanes in the United States.
Yeah.
So if you were going to compare our penalizing countries like Afghanistan, Germany and United States and Spain, all were involved in some type of planning on that. But that isn't the point. The point is that our foreign policy is atrocious and sets the stage, and then this is what we end up with.
And the other war we can't get out of is Iraq, they say. You know, how dare we debate this authorization? But here it is, 14 years later, every single problem in Iraq stems from our interventionist foreign policy. You know, we went in, we took out the government, we wiped everything clean, and then Al-Qaeda came in, and then ISIS came in. So we can never leave there because of the problem that we created in the first place, that our presence there continues to perpetuate.
And us getting involved in recent times is a reflection of us being involved a long time before that, when we were buddies with Saddam
yeah.
Hussein and gave him nuclear technology and the whole works. And that is why, you know, the position that we hold of non-intervention should be so appealing, you know, when it comes to safety and security and protection of liberty. Then when you add on to this the complication of 9/11, which is a consequence of our foreign policy, what about the destruction of our civil liberties at home? And a lot of people accept the notion, and you hear it more often, you know, I fear what's happening here at home a lot more than the Taliban, overseas. One senator was explaining, well, I can't vote for this because I can't vote for it because we need authority and we can't just walk away, and if we don't have this authority, who knows, because we have, his explanation, we had to protect the American people, and of course we are the American, and he claims that all radicals throughout the world exist for one purpose, and that is to kill Americans. Now, they have animosity. There is a lot of fighting. Americans do get killed. But that's not what caused the origination of these modern-day radicals. The Taliban was around for, even back when we were helping them, yeah, you know, yeah. when we were helping Bin Laden. Yeah. yeah, we helped create them. And, of course, how much did we work with Saudi Arabia to radicalize Islam, you know, yeah. and the training schools there? So, I think we have a powerful message. We do our best to get it out. It's not going to be heard on TV. But when the people hear it, they say, you know, that makes sense. Why are we doing those things? And, of course, the type of reception we had in Washington, we had a lot of people there that were receiving this message in that manner.
We did. We had a great conference, and our message was that, as you say, a non-interventionist foreign policy would actually provide the security that every other foreign policy lacks, that every foreign policy brings insecurity, ours brings security. And I think they're worried that people will wake up if they have a debate. But we had a great event in Washington. It was completely packed. I mean, I don't know how you felt. I was fascinated by Scott Ritter's presentation. Mm-hmm. I was deeply moved by the whistleblower panel. And I think, and so many, several people even said, I don't think in history these five people have been sitting it together on the stage, discussing their own cases and how telling the American people the truth has essentially destroyed their lives in many ways. And
right.
I thought that was just fascinating. So
we might have another conference someday.
I think we might do that.
As long as we can afford it.
Yeah, exactly.
I do want to thank our audience for joining us today. And paying attention to this issue is crucial. And also, I imagine the debate is still going on in the Senate, if I had to guess. It takes them a while to vote. And if the debate is going on and there seems to be enough time before the vote and you're inclined, send something to their offices. Maybe there's still some leaning. Believe me, on some of these issues, there will be a temptation to vote on principle and do the right thing, but there's also the pressure of the people who are the neocons who promote the war. So if there's time to do that, please do that. And I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.